So, principles of assessment. So, based on what we spoke about this morning, it is based on looking at assets and strengths. And the case study that we did at the end was an example of where we try to look at assets and strengths when you're considering assessment of people with long-term conditions. And because the module is not occupational therapy specific, we're looking at the kind of wider aspect of assessment with people with kind of long-term conditions. It's not kind of condition specific. So I know that there's lots of occupational therapy assessments to do with specific client groups, but we're going to be talking about kind of principles of assessment, self-care and self-management from a more kind of generic standpoint. So we heard this morning that it should be person-centred and ideally a joint assessment between health and social care. So the integration of health and social care services should hopefully enable that to take place. And the reason that that's considered a good principle of assessment is really to try and improve the coordination of services and aspects of support, so try and kind of facilitate that for somebody. Ideally, there should be a kind of named professional involved, almost doing like a kind of case management role, and that's coordinating services, leading on the assessment, and managing the whole process for somebody. And it shouldn't just be focused on the person's condition. So we know that the concept of asset-based approaches means that it's the individual who's the expert in their body and how the condition is affecting them. So the assessment should, of course, be relevant to all areas of that person's life that they deem to be important and based on outcome focused practice as well. So, if the person is considered to be the kind of expert in their condition and how it impacts on them, what type of assessment do you think a co-production approach would facilitate? Would you want to take any guesses? Qualitative, so something that involves a kind of conversation. So we had that in the outcomes-focused kind of practice. So it shouldn't be a kind of tick-box approach from this morning. It should be a conversational style of assessment. Anything else kind of spring to mind? The clue's on the next page. It's self-assessment. Okay, so the person is assessing themselves or being supported to assess themselves and what they feel that they need and what is important to them. So it's very much about the person's life and what outcomes that they want to focus on. Now, what that might entail depends on what kind of stage in their condition the person may be at. So their needs associated around the point of time with diagnosis might be quite different from the other stages. So quite often you might see people looking for a lot more information at the kind of diagnosis stage. So they're wanting to know information about their condition, what it means for them, what it means for the future, for their family, what's the kind of impact going to be on their life. If they're at the stage where they're now having to kind of live with this condition, so they're trying to figure out the best way of managing it and the best way of kind of managing their symptoms and working out how to minimise the impact on their everyday life. Perhaps they're at the stage where things aren't going so well and the condition particularly if it's a progressive condition, may have moved on, and their ability to cope, their resilience to be able to cope with progression and the changes that means for somebody's lifestyle. And that may well involve a transition to other services. So if somebody is no longer able to cope with their current package of care or in their current home, then that might involve a transition period for them to a different type of care package, or perhaps equipment being installed, or even kind of in considering moving home. Or perhaps it's actually about end-of-life care and having a think about somebody's wishes and wants as they approach that stage of their life. So there are a variety of different ways of doing kind of self-assessment and supporting somebody to do self-assessment. There's a variety of different toolkits available on the web. And you also get ones like NHS Choices as well that do a kind of self-assessment. You'll know the NHS Choices page is the kind of English version of NHS Inform, and it's where all the kind of health information is. So if you have something, a symptom, you quite often go on to NHS Choices to see what's wrong with you and do your self-diagnosis. Right. So they also have a self-assessment for people living with long-term conditions. So on the GCU Learn site, I've put up an example of a toolkit, a health assessment rather. It's called My Health Tools, and you can assess yourself to see which areas of, are needing support or more information. So this one kind of focuses on three kind of main areas: anxiety, breathing problems or pain, and it works through the different kind of aspects of a self-assessment that you can kind of work through, and it gives you ideas of where to go for health or support. So that's something that Kirklees Council have put together so people can undertake a kind of self-assessment. So we're going to be doing an example of a self-assessment in our kind of more interactive bit after the presentation, and you can have a go at practicing that. But in addition to assessment of need, is being able to take care of yourself. Now, we're all responsible for our own health and well-being. You would have debated this in the last workshop about rights, roles and responsibilities. So we're all kind of expected to look after ourselves in this way and take care of ourselves. So tell me some of the things that you do to maintain your physical health.
Exercise.
Anything else?
Sleep.
That's a good one. Yes, sleep. What else?
Diet.
Good. What kind of diet?
Balanced.
Balanced diet. 5 a day. Or is it 10 a day? Oily fish, fibre, things like that. Okay. We're all so good at all these things. What else? Health promoting OTs of the future. What advice do you need to give people when you go into houses and homes? I didn't miss that one. Thank you. Smoking cessation advice, alcohol intake. All right, these kind of things. Good. Okay. What do we do to maintain our mental health?
Friendships.
Mhm. Socialising. Okay. Okay, having alternative activities like hobbies. Okay, some people use things like yoga or meditation or mindfulness.
Reading.
I don't think we're quite so good at maintaining our mental health, but we are being encouraged to kind of focus more on that. And that part, of course, is being able to develop resilience, is being able to cope with stressful situations. And things like meditation and mindfulness are very good at giving you skills to kind of focus on the positive aspects of your life. So they kind of draw on the asset-based approaches. So things like, anybody a yoga fan? You're not going to admit it. So I'm a little bit of a kind of yoga fan, and they encourage you to do like kind of positive affirmations. Which all sounds very kind of hippie-like, I know, but encourages you to think of kind of positive things. So I was on somewhere recently and you did yoga every morning and you did your kind of positive affirmations, and you had this kind of man at the front telling us you had a beautiful life, and you had to think of all the reasons why you had a beautiful life and focus on them, and you made a commitment to being happy within your life. And you kind of focused on this each day. And the evidence does suggest that if you try and focus on things that you should be thankful for in your life, if anybody seen this technique used in practice where people are encouraged to write down 10 things that they are thankful for and give a reason why they're thankful for those things and repeat that every day for like kind of 10 days or 2 weeks, it really encourages a kind of more positive outlook on life. So you can try that yourselves if you wish. Okay, so we've got our physical health and our mental health. What about our kind of psychological needs? What do we mean by kind of psychological needs? So we've already mentioned the kind of social side with kind of friendships and relationships and talking to other people and socialising. What other kind of needs come under psychological needs? Can you think of Maslow?
Hierarchy.
Say that again?
Hierarchy.
Yes, what's right at the top? Yes, so your fulfilment, okay? Your self-fulfilment. So what is going to help you achieve fulfilment and self-actualization in your life? Okay. Some of you might say occupational therapy. Alright. Some of you may say, no, I don't think so. Alright. So have a think about all the different aspects of life that we're responsible for taking care of and managing and kind of having kind of a sense of well-being. So people who have long-term conditions are no different, but they may well have additional kind of self-care needs as well. So perhaps they need to take extra kind of care of themselves. So it might involve things like they might have exercise actually kind of prescribed to be able to maintain the condition that they have, or they may have to take medication, or they may have to kind of consider doing things like pacing to be able to take care of themselves. What is pacing? Tell me about that. Absolutely. So it can be used for fatigue management. What other kind of areas can pacing be used? Anybody seen it being used? Like chronic pain? Have you seen it for kind of where somebody's having to work through pain to be able to engage in everyday activities? So you get things like self-care toolkits that you can use. I'm just gonna take away this one. So this is a kind of example of a self-care kind of toolkit. This is on GCU Learn for You as well, and your kind of on the replacement activities. And it talks about the different stages that people can go through within working within that have long-term conditions. And some of them are. It talks about pacing, so it gives some examples of like ironing. So the whole idea is that if somebody's having a good day, they don't do everything that they possibly can and then spend the next 2 days in bed. So it's to try and avoid this kind of boom and bust kind of cycle. And you'll find that that's quite a common approach. Let me just scroll down to the section on kind of pacing of activities. Here we are, so kind of examples of pacing. So if, for example, ironing is quite important to you, don't know why, but it may be. Some people are very particular about their clothing, so it's suggesting to do things like only iron as much as you really need to. So for me, that is nil. No ironing, unless I can possibly avoid it. Which does mean that half my wardrobe lives in the ironing basket and I don't wear it. So, but it's things like that. So having a kind of urgent pile, a less urgent pile, or only doing kind of shopping a couple of times a week, or perhaps doing online shopping, or having a think about daily kind of activities in a different way. So it's more manageable and it can fit in with your symptoms, your energy levels, your pain levels, for example. So there's a lot of kind of examples on the web about pacing. Some of them are written by occupational therapists, some of them are written by psychologists. There's lots of kind of examples out there. So other things that can get in the way of taking care of ourselves is our beliefs, particularly if somebody has a long-term condition. So if they have beliefs about why they might have that condition, if they have religious beliefs and perhaps they believe it's a kind of act of God, or there might be a negative emotions, or even blame. They may blame themselves for smoking or drinking too much, or they may blame other people, for example, employers and the working conditions. So these kind of negative emotions can actually act as barriers for people being able to take care of themselves. So they become more focused on the kind of negative emotions and beliefs and less on the kind of taking care of ourselves. So the Department of Health did a kind of survey with people with long-term conditions, and they estimated that approximately 90% of people who have been diagnosed with a long-term conditions are happy to be involved in self-care of their health and take responsibility for their own health. Self-care is a little bit different from self-management. Self-management is more kind of about managing the symptoms and the treatment, appointments, things like that. So self-management is talked about a lot in association with long-term conditions. There's a policy document about self-management within Scotland. What's it called for long-term conditions? You know this, it's a slang word. I'm sure you'll be referring to it for your assignment. Must be on the tip of your tongue, I'm sure. Did the Irish not talk about going yourself?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
It's the purple booklet.
That's right, going yourself. Okay? So that is a kind of policy document that's been written by the Alliance all about self-management of long-term conditions. So let's hear a little bit more about self-management. Videos. I don't know why they're not playing. Watch. No, for some reason. So I'll leave you to kind of watch that in your own time. So there's kind of videos about what self-management means. So this is the kind of general practitioner. There's a physio, speech and language therapist who talks about working with people with long-term conditions and promoting self-management. So the link to that information is there for you. So things that people have to kind of self-manage then. So we've got the symptoms of whatever condition it is, the treatment that they may be going through, whether it's hospital appointments or medication, insulin injections, exercise, whatever it is that's being kind of recommended from the team, and of course occupational therapy might come into that. The physical consequences of actually coping with having arthritis or chronic pain or MS, for example. The psychological consequences of coping with a long-term conditions. So the psychological consequences of being diagnosed with a condition, the kind of change in our thoughts about ourselves, our identity, who we are, and the labels that comes along with that. So when people are described as diabetics, for example, how does that make that person feel, being labeled in that way? As a fair term, of course, is people with diabetes, because they're people first. So we kind of, if you're diagnosed with a long-term condition, the information tells us that people can go through almost like a kind of grieving process where they mourn their previous life, they go through the why me kind of stage, there's a bit of kind of denial, anger, and before somebody's able to kind of move on to kind of acceptance of the fact that they're having to live with this condition. And of course people within with long-term conditions really have no choice. Okay, they have to live with the condition. It's a chronic condition, defined by the name, it's long-term. So they have to self-care, they have to try and manage the condition as best as they can. But how they actually manage that condition, they have choices within. So what do you think are the barriers to self-management then, in terms of long-term conditions? What barriers have you seen? Absolutely. So tell me specifically about their mood. When can it be a barrier?
After the elements tonight, not have motivation.
Yeah, okay. So if they're frightened, if they're anxious, if they have low mood, that can interfere. What else? Okay, so if they have sometimes people have kind of euphoric kind of symptoms as well, so if their mood's not stable. What other things have you seen in practice? It's okay. Your cognitive ability. Absolutely, good. What were you going to say? Yep. Yeah, so a lack of support, lack of information, or lack of information in a way that's presented in a way that you want it. So do we give people choices when they provide them with information? Do they want the information in a written format, spoken format, pictorial? Do they want their family members present to take notes? So how do we encourage self-management? We've already mentioned that fatigue and pain can get in the way of self-management as well. But self-management is an important aspect. They reckon on average somebody with a long-term condition over the course of a year will spend about 3 hours with a healthcare professional. Okay, and the rest of the time it's up to themselves. So it's all about self-management. So if, when you've done your assessment of need with somebody, then of course goal setting will form part of that, and that's what we're going to be kind of working on today, an assessment that embraces goal setting. So as part of that, you're, if you're using an asset-based approach, you're looking at what is it that somebody's currently doing, what skills and strengths do they have that you can build on. And it may be that individuals just say that they want to go back to the way things were, they want their old life back, and they might need support and a bit of assistance to help identify more kind of focused goals on exactly what it is that's most important to them and what outcomes they want to focus on. So identifying areas of priority to work on. You've got the Just Right Challenge, of course. Remind me what the Just Right Challenge is. It's a nice easy one. It's not too difficult. It's not too easy. Okay. So being able to identify measurable goals that is at the right level for that individual. Okay. So that is more difficult than it sounds. So being able to know the person well enough to know what is going to be the Just Right Challenge. Now, given that sometimes people can identify over-ambitious goals, and that's something that is going to have to be kind of talked through, that is really important. If you make the goal too difficult, then somebody is more likely to give up with failure. It doesn't help improve self-efficacy. Alright, you make the goal too easy, then again it doesn't support self-efficacy. And perhaps, depending on what stage that person's at, be it the diagnosis, the living with, transition progression, perhaps some of the goals is about finding out further information and gaining support for the next steps. So you talked about risk management last week, so you'll last workshop rather, so you will know that we all have the right to live our lives to the full, and that brings with it responsibilities. Tell me about the risks that you take in your own lives. That you do on a daily basis. Crossing the road. What was that one? Your alarm? Snoozing? Is that running a risk of not getting up at all? Okay, what are the risks? Driving. Anybody drink? Occasionally. Anybody smoke? Occasionally. Anybody go out late at night? Okay, so we all take risks in our lives. And hopefully we have balanced up the risks versus the consequences. Okay, and it's a balanced risk. So part of the work with people with long-term conditions is looking at how can you enable somebody to have control and take risks in their lives. Risk management plan is, of course, the term that gets kind of bandied about, and as occupational therapists, we have to put into practice. So it's looking at what are the consequences, what are the benefits versus the risk. So just because something's a risk is, of course, not a reason for not doing it at all, but it's about making sure that everybody's clear of their responsibilities, the choices, and looking for agreed solutions. Sometimes it's the family that doesn't want people to take risks, go home, for example, and being able to kind of live on their own. So what tools and resources help us manage risk, help us enable people to self-manage and self-care? So there's a variety of different sources. So we've got apps and different websites. So this is an NHS page on kind of NHS approved apps that you can use for working with people with long-term conditions. So you see the different kind of categories down the side and different ones that you can try, like managing diet, stress, smoking, things like that. Right, it's a whole different range of apps that you can work with somebody. So you can find out about them. You also have lots of different charity sites and websites that you can use for sources of information, support groups, for example. And you also have telehealth and telecare. Tell me what telecare is. Okay, and how can that help people with long-term conditions?
For the likes of dementia, they have like dual sensors and stuff. People that can turn like this day and lift it up when they're like pressure.
Good. Okay, excellent. Tell me about telehealth. What's telehealth? So it's the same principles, but it's healthcare instead of kind of social care. Alright, so it's more focused on managing a health condition as opposed to kind of more kind of functional, kind of orientated. So recent examples that are being used, I'm going to refer back to NHS Lanarkshire again, that's where most of my recent experience has been. So they're using a system called Flow. Okay, so they're working, and it's where somebody texts in measurements to do with their health, they're given a mobile phone, and they text in results. Alright, so what their blood pressure is, for example, or how they're feeling today, or they answer questions. Have you ever had those questions sent to you? It's like a survey. If you ever phone Sky or anything like that, you get a series of 5 texts, you know, how did we perform today? So it's things like that. So people send in information by a text message, and that is then monitored by predominantly nursing staff. Okay, so they will look after a group of people with COPD, for example. Right, and they will send in their readings of how they're doing that day, whether they've got a cough, whether they're producing sputum, and they will kind of monitor the situation. So I'll give you a wee kind of example of that. This is an example from Stroke on Trent, but it's the same system that's used within NHS Manager.
Flow is a simple mobile phone texting system for healthcare. Flow texts advice and collects patient information, which the patient texts back to Flow. If required, this information can be viewed by clinicians on a device that can access the internet. For example, a computer in their clinical surgery, or a smartphone or tablet, etc. It's cheap for the NHS and works for patients with even a basic mobile phone. Flow uses a free text service for all users in the UK. It doesn't cost patients anything to use the service. Any costs are paid by the NHS. Flow can remind patients to take their tablets or use their inhaler. Patients can receive advice messages and also text in readings such as blood pressure or colour of their sputum. You'll need a suitable measuring device such as a blood pressure monitor for this. Gradually, people understand and manage their condition more confidently or improve their lifestyle habits. They don't need to consult their doctor or nurse so often. They can stay at home or at work and text their readings in when it's convenient. And as Flow uses a mobile phone, it works wherever they are. Text message charges may apply on outside the UK depending on the mobile phone carrier and tariff.
Okay, potential disadvantages of that service? Absolutely, yeah, okay. So a lot of the people that we're working with aren't necessarily technology literate, so that can cause more difficulties for them accessing services. There's also, that's a very kind of clinical example of managing kind of COPD, but there's also ones for managing mental health problems or dementia. So I'll show you a clip for managing the... They use a system that is called an autographer. Has anybody heard of this system? It's like a camera, you know, an alert system that's worn around the neck, the little red button. Well, it's like a camera version of that. I've never heard of this before, and I'll let the people describe it, and then we can see. So we've got this one clip, and then this lady in particular talks about the benefits of an autographer. So when somebody comes to see them again, or if somebody's given them a piece of information or advice, then they can go back to that, and they've got like a recording of it. It's like a kind of storage of their life. How actually that's done, I'm not so sure. I haven't had a chance to have a kind of full look at it. But nobody's seen this in practice yet. No, this was new for me, and I thought it was really interesting. It seems to kind of link in with the mobile phone project, and they get prompts as well to assist with memory loss for things like appointments, which most of us now do for things like the dentist and doctors and things like that. So I think they kind of link the two of them together, but this can be prompts for medication as well and things like that. So technology is starting to come more and more into kind of self-management tools. Okay, so that is that's the end of the kind of teaching and the information giving. So now it's going to be over to yourselves to have a go with a self-assessment that enables a conversation. So hands up if you've used the COPM before. The Canadian Occupational Performance Measure? Okay, some people have. If you have, can you please pair up with somebody who hasn't? Okay. Hands up if you watched the video how to do this prior to coming to class today. No. Okay, so we're going to have to do that in class, all right? So I'm going to hand out this. This is an occupational therapy assessment tool, but is now being used by other team members within teams generically, all right? It encourages a conversation for outcome-focused practice, and it's all about what's important to the person and their goals and how satisfied they are with their performance in it, all right? So we'll get this out and I'll talk you through very quickly how to complete the assessment, and then you can have a go with each other, all right? So experienced people, are you happy to kind of move around?